She's dead.
Death, a funny business on FUBAR Radio with Becky Briggs and Natasha Spencer-Levy.
It's all shits and giggles till somebody dies.
There is something so horrendous about listening to ourselves at that beginning. I don't know what it is. It literally makes my arsehole like disappear into my body. Like,
wow.
I'm like, I don't think it's that bad. I just think it's like there's something about listening to myself. I'm like, my voice is so annoying.
And that should be the intro to Death, a Funny Business.
Yeah, hi! Really positive way to start. Tash is like, I actually kind of hate my own voice. What am I doing here?
You're an actress. You love the sound of your own voice.
Yeah. Well, fuck you.
Fuck you.
Hi, baby.
Hi. Missed you.
I missed you too. It's been a whole week.
It's been a whole week. Should we do a bit of an intro?
Yeah, let's do it.
What's your name?
My name's Natasha Spencer-Levy.
And your mum is?
Dead!
Woo!
And you're? Who are you?
Becky Briggs.
And your dad is what?
Dead.
Yay!
And that is why we're here. Well, like, we have to do these intros.
Yeah, we do. Because we're not very good at being...
We have to do these intros. We've got new listeners.
Hi.
Shout out to the Tixer team.
Yeah, we do.
They're probably not listening.
They are listening. Of course they're listening.
But if they are, anyway, this is why we're. This is the show. This is what we do every week.
What we do, we talk about death and grief, and
it's a funny one though, right? Like when I have conversations with people about the show, and they're like, "Oh, radio show, cool," and then it's sort of like,
and you're like,
"What's it about?
It's like death?"
sort of like plummets. Yeah, that's the end of that conversation. I'm like, it's really funny though.
I don't know because my circle is very artsy.
Yeah,
and I think that
mine's not.
No, I didn't say that, did
no.
I? No. I meant, like, you know, my lot are all, like, actors and weird, like, you know, clowns and fucking, you know, they're all like, yeah.
Yeah, all part of the circus, whatever. Yeah.
And when I say I have a podcast about death or a show about death, whatever, they go, oh. I just get a, very nice.
Very nice.
Like, it's so normal.
Okay.
Like, so normal. Like, yeah, of course you have a podcast about death.
Of course you do. That's probably more a reflection of your personality than anything
else. And, like, my friends, yeah, for sure. They're like, oh, okay, yeah, for sure. Company you keep.
Today, we have two guests.
We do.
We have... Do you want to go?
I can do it. We have Anne O'Malley, who is an illustrator... And is a popular person on Instagram. Her handle is Grief Kid, and she makes some pretty sick grief content.
Yeah, she does sort of like little
illustrations
of stick men and little quotes next to it.
Yeah, which seems to be quite popular. And we also have, who do we have? Hold on.
Di Goddard.
Yep.
Ah, she's a grief hypnotherapist. And an author of How to Grieve a Life Interrupted, which I've definitely heard of.
Definitely heard of that.
And so, yeah, Tasha knew this. You knew this as soon as I walked in that I would be really obsessed with this therapist.
I said to Becky, I was like, yeah, we have a... She was like, yeah, we have a hypnotherapist. And then I was like, oh, yeah, Becky will like that one.
Sort of in the same line as breathwork.
Breathwork, you know? I'm just all, like, all about the physical...
The funny thing is I don't preach what I... I don't act, what's the word?
No, but I think you just like the idea of it, and that's nice.
I like the idea of it, and when I do it, I feel really good. I just need to practice some discipline.
That's me and, like, exercising. I fucking hate the concept of it, but once I've done it, I, like, actually like it.
Yeah.
But I also don't even like admitting that I like it.
Why?
I don't know. There's something, like, in my soul that's like... That is embarrassing. Like,
embarrassing.
That's embarrassing. Like, why are you working out? Who do you think you are? That's trauma. That's what that is. That's trauma.
Tash, there's so much that's trauma.
Bro,
there is so much
that is. I've been talking about this all week.
Okay, what's your grief? We need like a little grief update from you.
Grief update. Grieving my lost childhood, definitely at the moment.
Your lost childhood?
Yeah, my
life
totally
is just
my lost childhood.
Adult life is just a bit
chaotic. No. Like just being seven and then no longer being seven and being 45. Like, you know, going from being 7 years old to being like, okay, now you're not that I'm 45. Like, no, hear me out. This will make sense. Like being seven, my mum dies and all of a sudden I'm an adult.
Mm.
I'm an adult. And like, you no longer are allowed, you don't have a normal childhood. You just don't.
No.
It doesn't really matter whether you're like in a safe place or you just don't have a normal childhood. Like it doesn't, I don't really think that. I think, I mean, obviously like there are people, there are kids who like can have a normal, like an ish normal childhood, but like mine was very intense, like yeah. after mum died.
And I think it was, you know, we talked about in previous episodes, having spoken to especially people who kind of, yeah. You know, in the education world, yeah. and they're saying the most important thing is about having that community around yeah. you. And you didn't really have that.
No, I didn't.
So
no, I didn't. And then also, I mean, me and my sister were talking about this the other day, but we were talking about like growing up and whatever, and she's been having like a tricky time. She's, you know, she's like 22, she's figuring it all out as well. But we were saying like once mum died, like we don't really remember like coming home and talking. Like we just, like the three of us, like we just didn't really talk. And I think that's like such, it's like, you know, people at school like, oh, Tash is really disruptive. And I'm like, yeah, because I'm not allowed to say anything at home. I've been storing this up for 12 hours. Like, let me speak. You know, that's probably why I was so annoying at school. Because I was like so bored.
Why did your mum not want to talk with you?
No,
what
my
you mean?
Dad.
Oh, your dad. I think it was your mum.
No, like when after mum died.
I see. Yeah, of course.
Shows how much
you need
you
an
listen.
Outlet. Sorry. It's been a long day. It's just, yeah, you didn't have an outlet. So obviously.
No, exactly. And you're just like little and, you know, so yes, I've been grieving my lost childhood, but you know, swings and roundabouts. one must carry on
doesn't mean that and they just come here and talk
one
about
must,
it
yeah one must have a funny voice and then walk
and then
away.
Everything's fine
and then everything is
it's
fine.
Like when we did that grief with humor.
Oh, it's so funny. Oh my god. Okay, enough. Right, tell me about your grief, bitch.
It was my dad's birthday on Friday.
Oh, happy birthday, Mark.
Well, I kind of happy birthday. I think he would have been like 55.
Wow, really?
I don't know, he was born in like 69, so I'll let someone else work that out.
Yeah, my dad is a lot older.
And yeah, it is his birthday, and I kind of forgot that it was his birthday.
I always do that with mom's birthday, because it's like, it feels like almost like you forget
yeah.
the anniversary. You're like, there's a bigger date, but then...
Yeah, it's really strange, sucks. Because I was talking to my boyfriend about it, and he was like, you know, he won't mind me saying, but you know, his dad died, and like, he said he remembers his dad's birthday more than the anniversary.
Oh, really?
Whereas for me, I think the anniversary is a bigger thing than the birthday.
Right,
it was a weird one, but then I kind of like got to the end of the day and just sort of...
I'm like, oh...
I had a bit of a cry. It was on Friday. I don't know. I had a cry at some point because I was just like, it was such a build up of things. Like I've started this new job, which I really, really love. And like, I feel really like driven and I'm excited by life, but it's just a bit shit that I can't chat to him about it. And it's kind of in his world. And like,
yeah,
I feel like, you know, it just would have been nice to, that's when I really miss him. I like these milestones, right?
Yeah, for sure.
And like, not being able to kind of like,
get
be like, do you
want
to meet my boyfriend? Or like, do you want to like go to the pub and have a drink?
Oh,
you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
That's when I really missed him. I think that kind of hit home this weekend. And then I watched that diving
movie.
Documentary thing.
Was it called A Breath?
The deepest breath. The Deepest Breath. I don't know if anyone has watched that.
Who is it with? That's it bad, because you were like, I can't remember the names, and now
I
just fucked you over.
No,
there.
I can't.
Sorry.
Stephen Keenan was like, it's about him.
Oh,
it's his story.
Yeah.
His story of Alicia Zaccini, I think her name is. And it's just about their kind of like adventure into deep
free diving.
The thrill of it and the danger of it, and maybe perhaps I won't give it away, but there might be some losses, and that really affected me, and then I just cried and it was really sad.
Well, I finished the Hunger Games book that I was reading. I'm not going to spoil anything with people, but I also had a large cry because it's
smart.
Also, there are some losses in that too. Oh. Funnily enough, seeing as it's the Hunger Games.
Wait, is there a new film out now?
No, there's a new book. There's a prequel called Sunrise on the Reaping. Thank you. She is excellent. Suzanne Collins. She's always been excellent.
And you cried.
Yeah, the last 40 pages just really fucked me up. Really did. I'm sorry, Yaz. Producer Yaz is reading the book at the same time and she's like, shut the fuck up.
Yeah,
spoil it.
You should do like warnings before
I'm
you start
not,
talking
like,
about
I'm
stuff
not gonna
like that.
I'm not spoil anything. I'm just saying the last 40 pages really did me in.
Okay, fair enough. Would I like it? I didn't like the first one.
No, then you're not going to like this
one.
Aircon is off. Lovely. Thank you very much. We
just
have
live updates.
Timed.
Live updates
work,
from the room.
Everybody. Excellent work. I love it when we run like a well-oiled machine. Anyway, but yeah, it's a really good book.
Okay.
But yeah, I did have a cry.
Oh, I think I definitely have kind of... Oh, did I talk about anger last week?
A little bit.
Oh, okay.
No, but I'd do it again.
Did I tell you that I was hitting my boyfriend really hard with a pillow?
No.
Okay, so I found an outlet.
Ooh, oh, sounds a little... Okay, can you fill me in before we have to go to a break? Right, no. Go.
It's like, so basically, I got really, really angry about something, and then I just hit him with a pillow, and he went, keep going. It's like... Fucking fine. And literally.
What, and you like hitting him a bit? And this was, I'd like to point out, this was consensual.
Consensual. He's okay, keep hitting me.
This is where I was like, This is where I was like, okay, I don't know if you want to be confessing to.
No. It was his idea, really.
He was like, here, hit me with this pillow, young lady.
Yeah. And then last night, for some reason, I was angry, and he was like, just.
Want to play
pretend
the
that I'm there and hit me with the pillow again.
Jesus.
So
you need to be doing, you just that poor pillow, jeez.
I know.
How was that for you? Did you find...
But this is what I mean. It was really cathartic.
Maybe you need to do some boxing. You need to do some little, like, kickboxing or, like, little, like, what are those little... Like what Connie does.
Yeah. That is boxing.
Ding, 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 ding.
That is boxing. She does boxing.
Is that what she does?
Yeah.
Shout out to Connie. Love
amateur,
Connie.
Amateur boxer.
She's fucking ripped,
She's
mate.
She's fit.
She is so hot.
She's so hot. Connie got so hot.
I haven't seen Connie for like 11 years, so it's a bit creepy for me to be talking about her.
It's a bit creepy. But we should. I just want to talk about different outlets for anger, just because that's something we discussed last week.
Okay,
and I realised that.
Boxing.
I realised that I think grief, like we were always told as like kids, like don't be angry, you know, that's don't have a tantrum.
True.
And although that's, you know, we have to be sometimes socially respectful.
Yep.
Sometimes you do just need to go.
Wow. Oh, wow. Oh, that was lovely.
Try it.
I'm okay.
Try it. No, seriously.
No, genuinely, I'm okay.
Okay.
I'm a singer. I can't be doing things like that.
All right. Well,
I could do one of these. Ha!
And on that night, we'll go to a break.
Yeah.
Yeah. See you after the break. I'm going to be joined with Anna O'Malley. Yeah. See you then.
Love you.
What the hell with George Bertineau on FUBAR Radio.
I'm joined by Alex Mitten, retreat host and mentor.
I think a lot of people are lonely, surrounded by people at the minute. Like, you know, especially living in London, there's fucking people everywhere. But we sort of live these quite strange lives now where we're quite closed down emotionally, you know, even just like with our voice. We don't really speak that often sometimes. Do you know what I mean?
Listen to your favourite shows, such as Access All Areas, Politics Uncensored, and The Dating Show. You can also download and catch up on previous episodes of all FUBAR shows, including our box sets. Plus, you can get in touch directly from within the app.
Just search for FUBAR Radio on the Apple and Google App Stores.
The FUBAR Radio app. Get it today.
Get it today.
It was calm on the beach, so I took my little girl out on the water. Then we hit the wind, and it blew us out to sea, faster than we could paddle back, and we learned our lesson from these guys, the crew who got us home. Thank you.
Respect the water and watch out for the winds. In an emergency, call 999 and ask for the Coast Guard.
If you drink a little, then drive, you risk losing your license. You risk every day becoming more complicated.
How am I supposed to get to training, Dad? How am I supposed to...
You risk losing your job.
I'm going to have to let you go.
You risk your family not looking at you the same way.
I can't believe you did that.
You risk injuring someone.
Hello, I need an ambulance.
You risk being seen as a drink driver. Drink a little, risk a lot. Think.
Couple Goals with Sophie Kasai and Jordan Brooke.
When is too early to say I love you? Soph said it the night we met.
Yeah. Right, let's just clear this up, right? When I said I love you, I remember I said it in the car.
In the cab, yeah.
In the cab, and I was like, oh my God, I love you.
Yeah, well, that was the day I made you my girlfriend, wasn't it?
Yeah. And I said, I love you, and you were like, I love you too. And I was like, I love you so much, oh my God, I love you.
Access All Areas with Bobby Norris.
We are joined by Miss Safia. If I could produce you a salt, what is he like on paper? Sound like we're on Love Island.
Okay.
On paper, my type has to have a good soul, good purpose, and calm energy. I'm in my energy era where you've just got to come in and make me happy. I don't need you for anything. I wanna find happiness, and I need him to be kind.
Death, a funny business on FUBAR Radio with Becky Briggs and Natasha Spencer-Levy.
Hello, welcome back to Death of Funny Business. Yay. Anne O'Malley, illustrator, who's really popular on the Instagram account, Grief Kid. Hi, can you hear us?
Yes, I can. Hi, guys.
Hi.
How are you doing?
Yeah, not bad. Nice to see you, babe.
Nice to see you too.
And you, thanks for joining us. And we're going to dive straight in. Do you want to tell us a little bit about what this Instagram page looks like for those who haven't seen it before, and a little bit about your story?
Yeah, definitely. So, yeah, my name's Anne, and unfortunately, my mum died when I was 14. So let's just get straight in there, right?
Let's do it.
What it's about.
And that was pretty rubbish as a teenager navigating that. But I mean, having school and just things ahead of you, I kind of just kept going and didn't really talk about it much. And then, unfortunately, 10 years later, my brother also died. Oof. So both to cancer. You know, just a lot of grief. And then obviously lockdown and everything happened, and I had a lot of time on my hands and way too much time to think about the grief and everything. And I came up with a bit of an idea. I kind of thought, you know, if I was a cartoon character, what defines me in a way? And grief really did. It kind of did separate me a lot from my friends. And by that point, being 24, having lost, you know, mum and brother, it was a huge part. So I thought, actually, share my experience through this character and maybe help other people. I'd learned a lot by that point on how to talk about it, but I think we still, as a society, don't, and certainly not in a very blunt or straightforward way. Mm-hmm. So I thought, let's create some cartoons that say what I really want to say under the disguise of Grief Kid, be funny and blunt, and share it on Instagram and see what people think, really. And actually, it was a way for me to kind of process grief even further and also meet some people and help others.
And what was your, when you started, you said you like were trying to, you were quite blunt online. What was your like kind of go-to, what was your first thing that was like stupid and funny that you were just like, I want to be saying this, I know I really I probably shouldn't be, or people are going to be like, that's crazy or like weird or whatever?
Yeah, so I didn't tell many people at first because I was still quite nervous to say some of those things. So I didn't want loads of people knowing in case they thought I was like targeting it at them. But it was just the things that everyone says. So, you know, at least they're not suffering anymore, or at least you had X number of years with them, or, you know, cartoons or comments about people being afraid to mention their name, and then Grief Kid being like, come on, like, I'm always thinking about it. It's fine to say their name. And just given those different perspectives and what everyone's thinking but not communicating. Kind of just sharing that, I suppose.
And what do you hope others see, like, or feel it when they, you know, encounter your work? What's the goal there?
Yeah, I think it's just to feel seen and validated. I think it took me a long time to learn the words and how to express my grief. And it wasn't until I went to a kind of few grief groups that other people said how I felt. Mm-hmm. And suddenly I felt normal and like, oh, it isn't just me. I just, you know, I didn't know other people that had experienced that. So I'm hoping this is a way to validate other people in having those feelings, and people can comment and share. And they just feel like they're not alone, and that's not an abnormal thing to think or feel. And I think the benefit of having it on Instagram, like, it's just quick, it's easy. You know, we all forward on memes that are totally us to other people, so why not do it with grief? Like, you know, 100%. I'm a fan of the odd morbid joke, but actually I think there's a lot of power and processing and therapy underneath that in a way, not just the humor.
For sure. And we read earlier that you volunteer at Let's Talk About Loss, and we've had them on the show, and which was such a lovely chat. And I was just wondering what your experience was like with them, volunteering for them. And
what's that partnership? What do you do for them?
Yeah, so I am a volunteer. So I volunteer for the Bristol meetup group. Uh-huh. So they're one of the first charities that I went to a meetup myself. And I think, it was in a pub. And again, beforehand, I was like, oh my God, what am I putting myself out there? Like, everyone's going to be really weird and crying and creepy and whatever. And then again, this is one of the drawings. And then you go and it's just like, it's just normal people. Like, yeah. there is no difference between grievers and non-grievers. Like, we are just people. And it was just really nice to speak to people and kind of people at a similar stage of life. So yeah, let's talk about losses for 18 to 35. So we were all navigating, you know, relationships or jobs or things, you know, for the first time. So I really got something out of it. And then a few years later, one of the Bristol hosts was moving on and there was an opening. So I thought, yeah, I've got so much from this, and I still do, but I can also support and give back and organise the meetups. And since then, we've done things like go surfing, which I was awful at, but you know, it was just another way to break the ice and get to know each other. And mostly we just go for picnics or walks or go to the pub. And yeah, we do that once a month, and I just kind of coordinate the meetups with the other hosts. And it's an amazing group and space, and I don't know, it just every month I think it just tops me up in terms of my grief bar. I like to compare myself to a sim sometimes, like the old sim games.
I kind of love
that's good, that's really good.
Yeah, I've got a bar for, like, you know, is the house clean, have I eaten well, and then I've got a kind of bar for grief, have I kept in touch with that, or like explored that, not suppressed it. And yeah, that meetup kind of helps me not avoid the feelings and the space to share them.
Do you know what? That is such a good point. That is, because
it's like social battery, isn't
right?
it?
Right. And
like
I was just thing. Thinking when you were, you know, talking about having the, I mean, the reason like we started this show, right, was so that people felt like they had somewhere to go. And like when my dad died, there was nothing out there that I could find that was accessible, that was relatable to me. And so it's so amazing to hear that there's more and more of a community being built. So thank you for doing that, for one. But it reminds me that I don't necessarily feel as in touch with needing that as much anymore, or like thinking I need it. But actually, you know, you put it really well in terms of looking at it, kind of like that battery and at that kind of like, have you done that this week? Have you given yourself that time and that space to feel those feelings? Because in the end, I feel like you just do go a bit numb. And I'm definitely, got to the point sometimes where I'm like, oh, I could just ditch therapy now, or I could just, I don't need to do this. I think I've dealt with it. I'm interested to hear your thoughts on that and like how grief has kind of changed over the years for you, you know, with all of these kind of you know, the things that you've been doing and your like your creative outlets and things like that. So yeah, what were your thoughts?
So I think it's good having a range of options. So you've got counseling or therapy, but then there's also like these social spaces, or you know, just more options to engage with it, so it doesn't have to just be one size fits all. Because I think there's a time and a place for all of those things, but just having more of a collection of tools or spaces that you can go to depending on that stage or that place that you're in. So as a 14-year-old, I didn't do anything for years, and my first interaction with counselling was at school, and the therapist cried at my story, and talked about how I could basically get better grades because I was they were declining a bit.
Helpful.
They were lovely, whatever, it's fine, but it just wasn't quite the right space. So I think there is a lot more out there now for teenagers or young adults or kind of people in general. And I think it doesn't for me now, right now I'm in a good place in life and I can go to grief group and that helps me. But that's not to say maybe in a few years something might happen and it throws me. For example, you know, imagine I did have children without my mum, my brother. Maybe that's something it might unlock an area of grief that I might need a counsellor or kind of professional support with, and that's okay. But it's just having that range on hand and not just the extreme or that kind of all or nothing.
Yeah, really good point. 100%. Really good point. And are we right in saying you have a book, or have we made that up?
Yeah, soon. It's very nearing the end, hopefully.
Tell us about it.
So, little plug. It hopefully will be coming out very soon. And that's in collaboration with the Good Grief Trust. So another amazing charity.
Yes.
A bit of an umbrella where you can find support for any type of grief, you know, whether different type of loss, like relationship or type of death or anything with them. And yeah, so we've collaborated and that, yeah, should be coming out soon.
That's so exciting. Mm. Well, good luck with everything. One piece of advice for anyone that's going through grief right now, before we wrap things up, just I think it's really nice to hear everyone's different perspectives on this.
Mm. Yeah, well, I think I'll probably copy Beth in this because it is a bit of a obvious one from Let's Talk About Loss, but it is just try and talk about it. Mm. I think people don't necessarily want to ask you or initiate that conversation, but if you try and start it and show them that you do want to talk about it, they might then ask more or continue. So I think try and talk, and actually it might open, you know, more space to talk about it.
Yeah, completely agree.
Yeah,
thank you so much for joining us.
We'll do a little
plug later on our socials as well, and please keep us updated on your book.
Yeah,
but good luck with everything.
Thank you, take care.
Thank you, bye. Cool, amazing. Let's go to break and then we're back with Di Goddard, a hypnotherapist who specializes in treating grief. Exciting. Ooh. See you in a bit.
Foodbar Radio. Politics Uncensored.
The more alarming question is, what does this say to victims of these sorts of crimes which have been alleged on them? Essentially what they'll be looking at is two men who have a huge online influence, who say some of the most disgusting things online and spout off some of the, I think, most dangerous sort of ideas and narratives in the online space, that they've essentially been able to travel to the US while they're still under investigation in multiple countries.
You're listening to FUBAR Radio. Download our app now to listen to your favourite shows, such as Access All Areas, Politics Uncensored, and The Dating Show. You can also download and catch up on previous episodes of all FUBAR shows, including our box sets. Plus, you can get in touch directly from within the app.
Just search for FUBAR Radio on the Apple and Google App Stores.
Yeah. The FUBAR Radio app. Get it today.
Registering to vote means you can take part in the way decisions are made in the UK. When you register to vote, you are then able to cast your vote at local and national elections. You can help choose who runs your area and makes decisions about things you care about. Millions of people in the UK aren't registered to vote, and they miss out on having their voice heard. It's quick and easy to register. It only takes 5 minutes. You can do it online, or you can ask for a paper form at your local council. Register to vote now at gov.uk/register to vote.
I was fine on this beach the other day. I didn't know the time of high tide changes, and I had no idea it could come in so fast. So I'm finding out the hard way from this fella, the Coast Guard, who dropped in to get me out.
Ready!
Before you go to the coast, check the tide times online. In an emergency, call 999 and ask for the Coast Guard.
Pulse of the Nation with Andrew White on FUBAR Radio.
Are you aware of the tea alarm?
Tell me more.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's this cultural phenomenon that we have in Britain. It's an alarm at 3 p.m. Where everybody in the UK has to have a cup of tea, and if you miss it by a certain number of minutes, you get fined, basically.
This ain't real. This is not real. This is not real. I'm not playing into this.
Yeah.
You think me watching Keeping Up Appearances, you think Mrs. Bouquet was missing a 3 o'clock tea alarm? Y'all won't get me.
Couple Goals with Sophie Kasai and Jordan Brooke.
When I've met people in the past, I'm like, oh yeah, I really love him, he's the one. But I just knew they weren't. I'd say it, but I knew I didn't mean it. But when I met you, there was a different feeling. Like, it's like your gut just tells you. When people used to say, when you know, I was like, oh, piss off. But when you know, you know.
When I met you and times got hard, I would come up with a strategy to make it better.
Death, a funny business on FUBAR Radio with Becky Briggs and Natasha Spencer-Levy.
Hello, welcome back to Death, a Funny Business. Di Goddard, hypnotherapist and author of the book How to Grieve a Life Interrupted. Hello.
Hello, thank you ever so much for having me on.
Thanks for joining us. You've got quite the story. And it sounds like you've been through like a lot of loss. We were just reading about it and it's like super, super sad. Would you mind just kind of like telling us a little bit about those losses, who they are, a little bit about them, their names, anything you'd like to share with us before we kind of dive in and find out what it is
and
that you've done?
It doesn't have to be sad. You could tell us something lovely about them if you wanted to.
Okay, no problems. Obviously, we all experience a huge amount of loss, but mine is always one of those stories that people, you can see them looking at you as though to say, oh crap, I'm so glad I'm not her. But my first big loss, because there have been quite a few big ones, was my eldest daughter Liana in 2015. When she was 22, she'd had multiple organ failure for 4.5 years after going on a gap year to Africa, and the decision to switch her life support machine off wasn't one that I took lightly. In fact, I think she would have insisted on me doing so. We had a bit of a deal, her and I, that her life, if it wasn't to be a good, valuable life, wasn't to continue. So I held my end of the bargain up on that one, devastatingly. Wow. That was quite an expected death. I felt that maybe she perhaps wouldn't have died at 22, but she did. How dare she? A year later, very shockingly, her best friend was killed in a skiing accident. And that one just threw a curveball into me, and my grief started all over again. That was in 2016. Because we were on a roll in 2017, my lovely dad was suddenly found dead at his home unexpectedly at the age of 71. God. 71 when you're young is a really good age. 71 when you're, I'm now 52, is really young and way too early. So I lost my papa. And you know, you get a bit cocky when you've had a lot of grief. And I used to walk around, once I'd learned how to live with those painful losses, saying that nothing after losing my child could ever take me down again. Apparently I was completely wrong. Losing my husband last year to stage 4 lymphoma after a 2-year battle with the dreaded disease was something that the tsunami hit again. It took my legs out from under me, and apparently I can be downed at any moment in time. So my daughter, her best friend, my dad, my husband, that's enough now, girls. That's enough.
Di, that's a lot. I mean, we really struggle to know, you know, obviously we've gone through grief, our own mm-hmm. stories, obviously quite different, but it's still really difficult to kind of find the words and to know, because everyone receives kind of the love or like the the kind of empathy differently. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes it's really difficult to know what to say. But yeah, genuinely so sorry to hear that. Yeah. And like really interested to know how you've managed to get to this point where, you know, there's kind of that resilience. Tell us kind of like the key things that happened in your life that, you know, kind of the tools. We want tools. That's what we're looking for, isn't it?
Okay. I think I grew up in I grew up with a very pragmatic thought process. I grew up with a very supportive, loving family. But I also did grow up with death. When I was 7, my mum's brother was murdered. And that was my first experience of the fact that a family can just implode and be absolutely devastated. But there was a huge amount of laughter in my childhood, a huge amount of laughter in my family. And actually, even death is quite funny, which is a bit of not a shocking thing to say to you guys, obviously, but there is so much joy as well as death. And I think what I've learned is that one of the biggest things I learned after losing my daughter is that when someone said to me, I don't know how you get out of bed in the morning and function, my biggest fear was not getting out of bed in the morning. Like, what the hell do? Lay there wailing and thrashing? And because if you want me to do that, I can. But I just felt that I had to put one foot in front of the other. Or my daughter, for example, she would have absolutely scolded me if I had curled up and died after she had. And I think the resilience comes from hypnotherapy is my practice, is my business. And actually, it's about being able to sit with really uncomfortable feelings and understanding that this too shall pass. One of the things I learned when Liana was unwell, in fact, when she was in intensive care on one of the occasions when she was first unwell, was my husband had found me on the chapel floor in the hospital. I'm not religious at all, but I found every chapel and knelt on every floor and begged for my daughter not to be taken from me. Apparently I'm not God and I don't get to control that. But he handed me a little bookmark that was outside the chapel that you could put your coin in and take what you wanted. And it had those four words on it, and it said, "This too shall pass." And so my resilience, I think, I mean, I'm just owning my resilience. I've never thought of myself as resilient, but I think when someone pays you a compliment, it's rude not to accept it. So thank you. My resilience comes from the understanding that none of us are making out of it, none of us are making it out of here alive, that we then through death have an opportunity to really live. And what I understand now is that, yes, there's this flip side of this coin of having had so much grief and so much pain. And that flip side is when I laugh, good God, do I laugh? You know, when the sky is blue, I notice it. Mm. You know, when the rain comes, I don't think it's a bad thing. I think rain is amazing. I think I love deeper. I feel more joy because I'm so grateful for the life I do have. And I think sometimes you can get stuck in grief and almost, you know, I've met so many people that are stuck in a space of woe is me.
Mm.
And, you know, I'm still here. And one of the deals that my husband and I made in the last few days of his life was that he said to me, you have to live, Di. You have to promise me. His biggest fear was leaving me on my own, having, you know, lost our daughter and so many people and knowing my dad wasn't around. His biggest fear was me being on my own. And so we made a deal that I would move on and live my life for both of us and find those joy moments. Makes it sound like it's easy.
No, there's a lot of beauty in that. But yeah, I mean, it's not easy. And I'm just thinking about, you know, that takes stamina to continue to wake up every morning and, you know, put one foot in front of the other.
Absolutely.
Did you not have any sort of, you know, breakdowns? And when you did have that, how did you then pick yourself back up again?
Absolutely. I always remember the gut-wrenching noise that was the grief of Liana leaving, for example, when we had turned her life support machine off. Obviously, she was still asleep. She was still intubated. But it was about looking at the numbers on the screen that told us when she was finally passed, and that took 2.5 hours. Oof. And the noise that came out of me was scary. I didn't recognize the noise was coming from me. I was beyond broken. I still, 10 years later, that was the 7th of Feb, 2015, 10 years later, I'm not sure how I'm going to live the rest of my life without her, but apparently I am, and I'm doing it. There have been guttural wailing sessions. Yeah. There still are. I can cry on demand. It's just,
watch me.
Crying gets really freaking ugly. Yeah. And then alongside my grief, I noticed that I get a cracking headache and I get puffy eyes and I feel sick and I have all these things. And so I guess through experience, I've learned to try and not be scared of the feelings, that whatever feeling you're in, this too shall pass. Whether you do anything about it or not, this too shall pass. And I think grief is something that we're all going to experience, and hopefully not too young. But for those of us that have experienced it at a young age, if we don't take that story, if we don't take that love and do something powerful with it, then what the hell was all that about?
So true.
And with, I'm quite curious about hypnotherapy and kind of where that stands with your practice. And like, could you tell us a little bit about hypnotherapy? I feel like I'm not completely educated on like what the difference is between a norm, like a regular therapist and then a hypnotherapist.
Yeah. And also just to add to that, how does that work? And you know, you mentioned sitting in the uncomfortable, which is something that we've talked a lot about. How does that marry with or sit with, I don't know, how does that kind of... work with hypnotherapy.
I think therapy is great. Talking therapy is amazing at the moment of impact. And I advise anyone to go and talk about everything. I have done 9 months of grief therapy every week with an amazing therapist, a talking therapy, who has taken me through. I stopped doing it in March this year. And talking therapy is great at the moment of impact when you just need to get this story out, when you need to almost have someone say, oh, my goodness, I hear you. I get it. Hypnotherapy is really about the feelings element, because we say, I feel stressed, I feel angry, I feel grief, I feel bereft. And they are feelings that are physical in the body as well as emotional in the mind. So with hypnotherapy, it's more about settling the subconscious mind down into a really safe, calm space. Hypnosis is, you know, I have clients that still come in 10 years after me practicing that still say, you're not going to make me bark like a dog, are you? Now, if you want to bark like a dog, please carry on. Just let me know because I'll film it and hopefully we'll get lots of likes on that one. I can't make somebody do something they don't want to do. So hypnosis and therapeutic hypnotherapy is all about allowing somebody to really reconnect with themselves. Because when we experience anything that is as massive as grief, there can be a real disconnect between the body and the mind.
Mm.
So hypnotherapy is about sitting in a safe space and just understanding how you are feeling. And I help people to really begin to, instead of chasing feelings away, we get scared, we get frightened of feelings, uncomfortable feelings. Of course we do. You know, grief, pain is horrible. But actually, instead of running from it and trying desperately to pack it away into a box and sit on the top of that box and not allow it to open up again, we create so much discord in the body.
Mm.
And so with hypnotherapy, it's about allowing somebody to sit in such a comfortable, safe space that they can allow themselves to sit with that feeling and not be scared, and therefore understand it, diffuse it, allow it to dissolve a little bit, allow them to feel lighter and lifted and calmer. And then they experience something which is even more powerful, which is the understanding that this too shall pass.
Mm.
It comes in waves. You know, grief is I've always said it's grief is always behind me. I never know when it's coming. It's the tsunami that takes your legs out from under you. Suddenly you're being hurled along at 100 miles an hour, you know, down a ravine you don't want to be traveling down. But it does stop even if you do nothing.
Mm.
And so I guess with hypnotherapy, and also here's a bit of a weird one. I think also that people can sit in front of me and I will be really open and honest with my story and understand that my life is really good and that I can have this much grief, this much pain, and still on the flip side, find so much joy in life.
I'm so excited that you're saying this. I knew that I'd love talking to you when we found out. I feel very
reassured. I don't know what it is.
Because,
but
do you know why, Tasha? It's because I've said this before, we've had 9 months of conversation about this discord between brain and body.
Mm.
And we keep meeting people who are saying we need to connect them and we need to find ways to be present, to be able to let these emotions come to the surface.
We need to force each other to do it.
But this is my therapist is very much, you know, it's very kind of physical, and it's about being able to, it's not just talking, it's being able to kind of like bring those emotions out through, I feel like it's almost like a disassociation that happens. And the best work happens when I'm in that state, because I'm allowing everything to come up. Normally I go into a session and I'm quite hyper. I've either like come from work or I've been to the gym or something.
Yeah.
So my state is quite, I don't know.
Erratic. Yeah.
And then normally towards the end of the session, I've kind of calmed down, and that is when everything kind of comes, you know, pouring out of me. And so that's why I get really excited about this, that you're talking about stuff like this. I had also once done NLP. I don't know if you've heard of that. And I remember having to sing like Happy Birthday or something very strange. So I want to dispel any myths, or like, can you just explain to us, Di, like what does it look like coming to a session with you? Like what happens?
Good question.
So whether we work together on Zoom or whether you come into my garden office here, this is all about comfort and relaxation. So reclining chair, bit of heebie-jeebie background music. I'm using my voice, and actually what I'm doing is I'm giving somebody full permission to let go and let me do the work. Yes, obviously I need to have a discussion with somebody about what it is they're experiencing, but actually people expect that they won't be able to relax, and people aren't used to relaxing. We are always living such chaotic, fast human existences. I mean, the human species have really cocked up when it comes to how to be calm and peaceful and live a very zen life. And then I will guide somebody through a process of relaxation just through a storytelling association with, you know, imagine a classroom full of kids all sat cross-legged on the floor staring at the teacher, and the teacher's taking them into an enchanted forest. They're staring at the teacher, but they don't see the teacher. They're on the journey into the enchanted forest. Mm. So I talk to people about how their breathing slows, their heart rate slows. I get them to visualize certain things and to feel certain things with the body, take them on a journey, on a storytelling, lots of release, letting go of heavy burdens, dropping stones into water, lots of metaphors and things that allow people to then come through a session and feel lighter and calmer. And you know, I think what we realize, especially with grief, is that grief isn't something you ever fully recover from. And I don't want that to scare you, but it's something that you have to then learn to live with, because you will always miss that person that you love. You will always think of them fondly or even be pissed off with them at times. You know, there are so many things that we are. I'm still Liana's mum. Just because she's not here doesn't mean I don't worry that she's okay. Doesn't mean I don't think of her on, you know, high days, holidays, and every single day in between. I miss her presence. I miss my dad. I just want to talk to my dad when my husband died. And every time I do something, I want my husband to see it. You know, so this grief isn't something we're ever going to fully recover from. But you have to try and take some steps towards learning what that feels like for you, and then being able to rediscover some joy.
Mm. 100%.
Because that's the purpose of living, is to experience joy. So I think with hypnosis, it's really, again, repeating myself, it's that ability to show somebody how to create the mind-body connection. We are so disconnected.
Yeah.
We're, you know, on the tube into work. We're on the phone as we're walking down the road. We are running a million conversations in our head. We have upwards of 60,000 thoughts per day, for goodness sake, you know. Sometimes we need to practice being still. When we are still, and hypnosis provides that still, trance-like, staring out a window, just missing something for a moment feeling. That lovely feeling when you're just waking up in the morning and you've forgotten all the crap and chaos that's going on in your life. Hypnosis is that opportunity to be still, to be quiet. And in those quiet moments is where you just make the best decisions, where you just allow yourself to feel and not run away from those feelings and that grief.
So do you think that once you can sit, you know, I guess, in the comfortably within the uncomfortable, is that when you think you've reached a point of, you know, being able to kind of manage grief?
I think it's having permission to grieve. I think so often we don't live in a society where we like to even talk about grief. You know, and there's this constant pressure to how soon before I have to go back to work, and my boss is looming over my shoulder, and the expectations of society that, well, once the funeral's out the way, shouldn't everyone be back to normal? And, you know, shouldn't I be over it by now? And I really think that once we can sit and give ourselves permission to know that there are going to be some really tough days in the future, but that we will come through them. I think once we give ourselves permission, because nobody else is going to give you permission to grieve. This is your grief. What grief means to you is completely different to what grief means to me or somebody else. It's really personal. For every single person that's grieving, it feels personal.
Mm-hmm.
You can't explain what it feels like to have lost your child, your best friend, your dad, your husband, your mum, even grandparents, great grandparents. There's just this continuum of loss throughout our life. And grief is something that we don't often have permission to feel and talk about openly. People are so scared of dying. They're scared of grief because ultimately it says, oh, guess what, guys? This is you as well. None of us are getting out of here alive. So, you know, we get on the mortality train, and that's why we try and hide from grief so much, because guess what? Even you guys aren't going to live forever.
Exactly. And I mean, so Tasha and I have lost a parent. But I'm really, I guess I'd like to know from your perspective of like losing a child, we've not really spoken to anyone about that, and like you don't have to say as much as you'd like to say, or you know, don't have to comment at all, but I'm just interested to kind of know how that grief is different from losing, you know, you've obviously experienced different types of grief, and especially what would you want from someone in that moment when you've lost some, you know, lost a child, what can people around you do to help? Because I think that so much of these conversations is about learning and working out, you know, what should we be saying to someone, and I know everyone's different, but it would just be really, you know, interesting, helpful to know.
What's really interesting is the first thing I think of when you ask me that question is, say something. Don't stop talking about my child. Don't cross the road when you see me. You know, don't hide behind the clothing rail in Marks and Spencer's because you saw me walk through the door. Because all of those things. I've lost friends.
Yep.
I lost one of my dearest friends who was in my girl gang because, let's be honest, it wasn't about her in that moment. And it was, you know, it's just say something. Be in that space. I tell you the most interesting thing someone ever told me that allowed me to realize that I could lose Liana and still live is that if the day she was born and she had been placed in my arms, if someone had just come up to me momentarily and said, oh, hang on a sec, Di, just to give you a heads up, this one's only going to last 22 years. Do you want to swap her out for another one that's going to last longer? The answer would have been no. That's my child. Her journey, and this is what Liana taught me in the 4.5 years she was unwell, that it was her story. And the book I wrote about her story came from the fact that years ago I worked in publishing, and so I had the understanding of how to be able to do that. But actually someone said when Liana was unwell, oh my God, you know, you couldn't make that story up. You should write about Liana's story. And she turned around and she went, but it's not your story to tell, it's my story. And I think when we have children, we feel that we have ownership over that child. And I guess to a certain degree we do, but not as they get older. And Liana taught me that she was her own person. And this was her life story, not mine, hers. And she was a strong, feisty son of a gun, let me tell you. I mean, the trouble that kid caused me when she was young, she was only ever going to cause me even bigger trouble when she was older. But I'm really glad she was the feisty kid who got you know, detentions at school and got caught bunking off and got into a fight at the school disco once with a lad and came home with a black eye. I think he had a worse black eye because she was feisty. And what she taught me was she had incredible strength and she wasn't scared of dying. She was scared of pain. She had a lot of pain in 4.5 years. She had pancreatitis 11 or 12 times in the first year that her pancreas failed.
Oh my
and
God.
Every time she dialyzed, because she had no kidneys by the end of the first trauma, the first day of her sickness, she was on dialysis until she had a transplant. And actually, every dialysis session made her feel ill. So Liana was never scared of dying. Liana was scared of pain, and she was just scared of having a life that wasn't going to be amazing. And so it was what Liana taught me that allowed me to continue with my life, having lost hers. And I like to say that, and this is when I'm feeling particularly strong, when I'm in bullshit mode and saying that I'm fine, is that I take my pain and I stand on top of it and I beat my chest at the world and I say, well, come on then. What is it you think you're going to do next?
Wow.
Although apparently it was going to take me out with my dad and my husband. I wasn't actually sure I should have taken the risk of saying that, because apparently losing my husband was equally as atrocious and has knocked the wind out of my sails. It's a lot, but I have these pockets of joy.
Yeah.
Like he and I had a deal. And what Jay taught me was whereas Liana's death was very mechanical, my dad's death was very sudden and unexpected. Jason's death was beautiful. My husband's death was beautiful. He showed me what a beautiful, powerful, loving death could be. And I feel them all around me. I'm extremely spiritual. I'm quite intuitive. And I feel them. I feel them around me. I know when they're near me. And I think that that is a blessing.
Thank you so much, Di. It's been really, I mean, you've just, yeah.
So beautiful.
You do have, you both have a story. You all have a story, but it's been really, really interesting to be able to, you know, hear yours and Liana's and be able to talk to you about, you know, your journey and the tools that you've used to kind of get to where you are today. So yeah, thank you so much for joining us. And obviously, yeah, everyone and anyone listening, your book, Liana, Her Story, My Words. Is that right? Anyone can go
That's her story. Yeah, absolutely. Liana, Her Story, My Words. And then How to Grieve a Life Interrupted. Yeah. So
go absolutely. And check those out. We'll go and give those a plug on our socials as well. Yeah. But thank you so much for joining us. And for everyone else listening, we will be back next week.
We will be back next week.
On Tuesday at 5 o'clock.
Yeah, we will. We still have 30 seconds.
We still have 30 seconds to chat.
Becky was doing Tash that thing where she like
stressing out.
No, but what a lovely day.
We're going to a show tomorrow, How to Fight Loneliness.
Yes.
So we're going to debrief that next week.
Yes. Which was from the guest that I had on my solo show, the director. So exactly. That's going to be great. What a lovely lady.
I actually need time to process this, and we need to debrief this next week as well.
We'll have to debrief this in next week's episode.
What a lady. Pretty phenomenal.
What a story.
Yeah. Incredible. But anyway, have a nice week, guys. See you next week.
Love
Thanks
you.
Thanks for listening to The Funny Business. Bye.
FUBAR Radio.